Welcome to the Pen and the Yad. This week's Torah portion is Shemini. Rabbi Michael Siegel from Anshei Emet Synagogue in Chicago sits down with author Jonathan Eig and talks about living in seven and trying to get to eight, the power of numbers.
You a math person?
I'm terrible. I failed math 3 times in high school.
God, we have something in common. I'm so bad. I was teaching yesterday, and in two separate occasions, I miscalculated a number. It was like by 10. But I was giving an example. This happened, 110 years ago. It was actually 80 years ago. And it's like totally embarrassing. It's been numbers, as you know, play an important role in Jewish life. We have gematria. We can disassemble a word and we can recreate a word. But if someone asks you a question and said, what number, and it has to do with Jewish life, more than 50% of the time, the number is going to be 7.
That's what I would have guessed.
Okay, there.
Is that why it's the most common lucky number, you think? Because it's biblical?
I don't know. But
does that have more to do with Vegas?
I thought it had more to do with convenience stores, but who knows, right? I don't know. But in Jewish life, the number 7 is the key number. Too often as scientific thinking people, we get caught up in this, the creation happened in 7 days, and how could you even think that for a moment? And then you have fundamentalists who are saying, is anything too great for God? When really the Torah is, at least from my vantage point, isn't so interested in the day part, but in the number 7. 7 is, from the Torah's perspective, the number of potential completion. Potential completion. So human beings are created on the 6th day. Shabbat is the 7th day. And what the Torah is saying is that the world was not created in its finished form. Human beings were created to be God's partners to complete it. And unless we complete it, it won't be complete. But this portion is called 8, Shemini. So that's the question. What does the number 8 represent and what's going on here? I want to suggest to you that we live in a world as it is, but at least as Jews, and so much a part of Judaism is imagining the world as it could be. Do you ever imagine a different world out there, or have you become cynical like most of us and saying, nothing's ever going to change?
No, I'm still an optimist, and I'm still a believer that we can do better. And I think we have to. I won't go negative. I'm going to stick with the positive. Yes, I can still see hope for us, and I still believe that we can make that difference.
So you still believe that human beings have the potential to complete 7 and even come to 8?
Yes, I do.
That's the framework of Jewish thought, so that when we are living in partnership with God or with a higher ideal, then we have the possibility of completing the world, but even touching on the potential of what can be. And it's interesting that of all Jewish rituals, almost all of them happen around 7, but a circumcision ceremony takes place on the 8th, as if to say that when we look into the eyes of a child, when we have this moment when the past and the present and the future are all coming together, that we dream of 8. It's hard not to hold a baby and dream of a better world that you want to give this child. How do I get to 8?
Yeah, that's interesting. I've always wondered why it was the 8th day on that. Are there other number 8s that I'm not thinking of?
Some of holidays, like we have a holiday called Shemini Atzeret, the 8th day of assembly. And if you look at the Haftarot on those days, whenever you have an 8 holiday, then or on Pesach in the diaspora, you have an 8th day of Pesach. In Israel, you have 7 days of Pesach. But in the diaspora, you have 8 days. The 8th day, if you look at the Haftarah, it's about the Messianic era. It's always about the Messianic era. And so it's kind of a reminder to you that this is the world as it is, but we never lose sight of the fact that the world can be something more. And that's a large part of the Torah reading, because they're dedicating the tabernacle. And in that space, that's where God is. So we leave this world in order to kind of imagine a better world, a more perfect world, a more just world.
So the 8 is the extra. The 8 is the day that is to be fulfilled. As the Beatles sang, 8 days a week, I can love you even more than just 7 days a week.
I don't know if you know this, but this was actually the background in the temple. It was the Beatles soundtrack.
Oh, really?
No, and a lot of people don't know that, but it's true. No, it takes a week. I don't know if the Beatles were aware of this toll reading. I sort of think they weren't. But the context here is that Aaron is dedicating the temple, and so the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and so they're going to go for 8 days, and they're going to build this and dedicate it. So every day there is a group of animals and all the rest. But it's the idea that that's the potential. I'll give you an example of what I mean. We have a prayer called Ashrei, right? Every bar mitzvah parent knows this prayer by heart because they've listened to their child crank out Ashrei about 1,001 times. Mordechai Kaplan was one of the great teachers of the Jewish Theological Seminary until he went off and created the Reconstructionist movement. He's really a remarkable philosopher, thinker, rabbi, leader. But when he was at the seminary, they once had him teaching homiletics, which is a fancy word for sermon giving. And one day he passed out Ashrei, the Psalm 145, where it says things like, Potech et yadecha maspil l'chol chai ratzon. God, you open your hand to all the living and satisfy every living thing with favor. Or you straighten up all who are bowed down. So Kaplan said, gave it out and said, this is a true false test. Take it. And he said, true or false? Does God open up God's hand to all the living? And of course, you know, rabbinical students were flummoxed by this whole thing.
Right.
I think what he was trying to say was that Ashrei is not some ivory tower understanding of the world. This is the world as it could be. This is what eight looks like. But in order for that to happen, you have to open your hand. Because what we know by now is that God isn't going to open up the divine hand and rain down manna on us. That was nice while it lasted. It ain't happening again. We have the potential, right? We live in a time when we have the power to feed every man, woman, and child in the world. First time in human history. And we don't do it. So we don't open up our hands. Why is God, you know, why are we looking at God? We could raise up those who are bowed down. Think about the healthcare conversation going on in our country, right? Think about how we treat the elderly. What happens? Are we doing any of those things?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And we love to complain, you know, if there's really a God, how could these things be happening? But then the question is if we have these powers as men, as men and women to change the world and to be a partner with God, why are we not doing everything we can?
And part of that, I think, is that cynicism that I made a joke about at the beginning. This is the way it's always been. This is the way it's always going to be. Don't. Why bother?
Right. Right.
What people sometimes call compassion burnout. Oh, you know, Rabbi, I used to march in those marches, but I'm a Republican now, or I'm a conservative. I live in the real world. I don't know what that even means. I think that there are compassionate Republicans, and I think there are also Democrats who have no compassion.
Yeah.
So I don't think that that's at all anything that we should be labeling. Jews aren't allowed to be compassion free. That's not a category for us. We live in seven, and every Shabbat, we pause and we say, here's the world. Here's what it can feel like sitting around a Shabbos table. Here's what it's like to be part of a family. Here's what it's like to be part of a community. Now, how do I extend to the other 6 days a week? And then you have moments like this where you say, I want to create a greater world. I want to be aspirational as to what the world can be.
Now, you know, I heard Rabbi Cosgrove many years ago in our shul give a sermon about being partners with God in creating the universe. And he mentioned the example of the people who invented the birth control pill. Here is somebody saying, I want to create a pill that changes human reproduction, that allows women to control their own bodies and get pregnant when they want to. And people said, this is, you know, more than 100 years ago. People said to this woman who had the idea that that's impossible. You know, that's just not the way God made human beings. And she spent the rest of her life working on trying to find a way to allow women to control their reproductive system. And I think Rabbi Cosgrove's point was that this is acting in partnership. This is the way God gave us the world, but that doesn't mean it has to be that way forever. We can make change.
We can make change. And by the way, I know you won't say it, but I will. You wrote a great book on
Rabbi Cosgrove's sermon helped trigger an idea for a book for me. And I wrote a book about the invention of the birth control.
And the power of that idea. And that, I think, is part of the greatness of Jewish thinking. Part of the partnership means we take the world as it was given to us, and we perfect it. The world isn't perfect in and of itself. It's good, as the Torah tells us, but it's perfect, and it's up to us to move that along, to go to complete seven, and then dream about eight.
Turn the amplifier up to 11.
8 days a week, as you said. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks. This is fun.